Hello, this is Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network every Thursday at 1 p.m. And you can also find me on the Conscious Resistance Network and Conscious Resistance YouTube channel. So today we have Ian Freeman coming in from New Hampshire. He's the host and founder of Free Talk Live on the Liberty Radio Network. And he's also a blogger at, is it freekeen.com?
That's right, freekeen.com.
Freekeen.com. So, yeah, great. Thanks for coming on. So Ian, why don't we start off with, how did you become an anarchist? I like starting off with that.
Well, I'm actually not an anarchist. I don't really much care for that term. I think it has some connotations of bomb throwing and destruction of property, and I prefer a more positive term like voluntarist, which really defines more about what I believe rather than what I'm against. So I believe all human interactions should be consensual, and that makes me a voluntarist, not an anarchist.
Excellent. I definitely do agree with that. I know Jeff Berwick is he understands the slander that comes along with the word anarchist, but he wants to use it nevertheless because some people, I guess, enjoy, getting into arguments and disproving,
I consider anarchist to kind of be like a libertarian macho flash where, you are kind of using the term to sort of stir it up. And personally, I'm not interested in trying to save that term, nor am I really a fan of trying to save the libertarian word either. So I like voluntarist. I don't think it's been co-opted in any way, shape, or form at this point.
Yeah, quite right. I mean, voluntarists, it just starts, I think it piques people's interest. Like, what is, how can you be against voluntary interaction, right?
Sure. Conceived notions either when someone hears it for the first time or they hear it for however many other times they've heard it. Because, voluntarists have never been accused of blowing anything up or destroying any storefront windows and things like that. So I don't want to take on that mantle with the term anarchist. It's not something I wish to spend my time on.
So how did you become a voluntarist? When did you start down this path?
So I became a libertarian back when I was a teenager, and I tried smoking cannabis for the first time, and then I wondered what else they'd lied to me about. Turns out it was a lot of things, and I found the Harry Brown Libertarian Party campaign back in the year 2000, got active with that. That was really my first kind of activist action that I took, and became active with the Libertarian Party from that point forward. I ended up resigning publicly from the LP in 2008, just before they actually approved Bob Barr as their presidential candidate. I felt like the LP had fallen away from its principle, which, it's supposedly the party of principle. And, so I thought that they'd gotten away from that. So I decided that, that was around the time frame when I was kind of becoming a voluntarist. And I always kind of looked at being a libertarian as being a voluntarist, but just the term libertarian seems to have been co-opted by these people who, let's call them, some of them on the right, some on the left, I feel like are not libertarian, that they don't have truly principled beliefs. And I think you have to have that to be a libertarian, but it's one of those words I'm willing to just kind of not necessarily wear on Front Street. I'll sort of begrudgingly accept it, but that's kind of how I became a voluntarist. I don't know if that answered your question very well, though.
That's all right. I mean, I think, does Rand Paul consider himself a libertarian?
Not that I've heard of. I think he calls himself a Republican.
Okay, that's good.
But he gets accused of being a libertarian in the mainstream media. And then you have people like Glenn Beck and Neil Bortz. These are some other talk show hosts. Even Dennis Miller claims to be a libertarian, but yet he's
really?
For war. So, you can't support war and be a libertarian, as far as I'm concerned, unless you want to fund it on your own and not force other people to. But even then, I would say, I call it into question.
Yeah, quite right. I mean, I kind of was confused at the idea that libertarians have a political party. It's like, to me, it's like, how can you have an anarchist political party? isn't that a contradiction in terms,
And yeah, I guess that's probably why they don't call themselves the Anarchist Party.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, because if you take libertarianism to its end result, it seems like you wouldn't necessarily become a voluntarist or an anarchist, right? So how can you stop short of, saying taxation is, if taxation is immoral, then you would conclude that all taxation is immoral, not that some is okay, right?
Yeah, they say the difference between a libertarian and a voluntarist is 6 months in New Hampshire, because if you, I guess some libertarians, you know, they come in on the smaller government mentality or the leave me alone socially mentality, and then hopefully they'll come into understanding what the, you know, the principles are behind this concept, and then eventually come to the conclusion that no state would be preferable.
Oh, yeah, sure. You know what I'm actually interested in hearing about is I've been watching the videos of you and Chris on the, I think, is it the board of legislators that in New Hampshire that you guys go to? I'm curious, like, I'm sure you don't tell them, like, about anarchy. Like, you just talk about the bills in question, right? Like, the economics behind it, maybe?
Well, I mean, I don't use the term anarchist. Chris might.
Okay.
He might actually say that. I know he had a conversation with one of the state reps over Facebook the other day. That state rep had just reached out to him to have a conversation, kind of asked him about his beliefs. And, you know, he came right out and told him, we're not there to hide our belief system. I mean, if you're talking about the anarchist lobbyist, series that he's been putting up at ChristopherCantwell.com,
yeah.
I think they're good because, you know, we are bringing principled ideas into the state legislature here. And, you know, believe it or not, they actually listen and they'll stop you in the hallway and want to talk and hear more. And, you know, they're more genuine here in New Hampshire than in a lot of places. The state reps only get paid $100 a year here. Where are you tonight?
I'm in New York, in Rockland County, New York, near Manhattan.
Yeah, I don't know what they get paid in New York, but I imagine it's a lot more than $100 per year. And I think you guys have, what, like 100 state legislators there?
Oh, I didn't even look into that. I don't even know.
It's probably not that many. New Hampshire has the largest, what they call citizen legislature in the United States, and it's one of the largest in the English-speaking world. So that means that each one of their representatives actually represents a very small amount of people. Mm. So, I mean, I don't believe the idea that they're representing me, but nonetheless, there are still some people in New Hampshire as state representatives who come pretty close. Like, there are people. There's one state rep who was wearing an anarcho-capitalist shirt, you know, regularly outside of the state house.
Really?
So, I mean, some of these guys really are anarchists and voluntarists and true libertarians here. And we've managed to get them elected because of the Free State Project, which, of course, is bringing 20,000, hopefully, liberty-minded people here to New Hampshire to get active. And so it's fun to walk around the state house and see other libertarians and voluntarists and anarchists there testifying and actually there as state reps. That doesn't happen anywhere else.
Yeah, it's really great that you have this dialogue with them. You know, I imagine that you know, it's good to theorize about this stuff, talk about it, you know, on your radio station and write about it and do videos, but it's quite another thing to actually talk to the people who are we would say oppressing us, but they would say, you know, regulating us, right?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting experience. It's something I never did before. I moved from Florida here in 2006 as an early mover for the Free State Project, and I've never looked back. I mean, I would never have considered going to Tallahassee in Florida because I didn't think there was a chance that any of those state reps down there gave a damn. I mean, they only pay any attention to anyone during campaign season, and after that, it's just like, that's it. They're done with you. But here in New Hampshire, you can actually pick up the phone, call whatever, you look up their information on the state website, and when you call them, their kids will answer. It's like a home phone number.
Oh, really?
Or it'll be a cell phone number. I mean, even the state senators, whether the local state senator here, I mean, I can call her on her cell phone. So that's just, you know, again, that's something that's hard to really envision for a lot of people because and I think the state senators only get paid $100 a year as well. But that kind of keeps these guys grounded somewhat.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, they're still politicians. Yes, you know, you really can't trust them. But at least here you can actually talk to them, and I think there's some benefit to that.
So I understand that you and Chris don't just go in there and, like, blindly go against everything. Like, there are some proposals that you actually support, right, that are, like, kind of repeals of certain laws?
Yeah, well, for instance, marijuana decriminalization was a recent one, and so we went there to testify for that. And there will be other things that come along as well that, you know, will help increase liberty. And, of course, there's plenty of things to testify against as well.
Yeah. I can't imagine doing that over here. Really.
Wouldn't be worth your time.
It's difficult, yeah. Yeah, I imagine they definitely do get paid a little more than $100. Is that $100 a month or a year, what'd you say?
That's per year.
Per year.
Plus, they get a per diem as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
For gasoline purposes, I guess.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the history of Free Talk Live. How'd that get started?
Back in 2002, I was working for Clear Channel down in Sarasota, Florida. They had a talk radio, they had a rock radio station on FM that they flipped to talk radio. A year later, I pitched them on having a local show because it was all shows coming in from other parts of Florida. And the general manager said yes. I mean, I'd been working there for several years, so I had the kind of the political capital, if you will, or the currency to make that happen. And me and Mark Edge and some other folks hosted the show back then, and we ended up leaving Clear Channel and taking the show to a couple of other stations before it was ultimately syndicated by Genesis Communications Network. I've been doing affiliate relations for the show since then, and we've gotten over 150 radio stations in about a decade of syndication. So it's kind of a, you know, a little syndication success story. I mean, we're essentially a show of no more than a handful of people who's got a very pro-liberty viewpoint and is heard on over 150 radio stations. There's nothing quite like it out there, and so thank you.
Yeah, it's great. Like I understand that you guys don't have anybody screening the calls, right? So just anybody.
Oh no, we do have a call screener, but he doesn't screen anyone out. So all the call screener does is he gets phone number, but he gets name, where the person's calling from, how are they listening? Are they listening on the radio? Are they listening on the internet? You know, that kind of thing. And then, like, one word, what do they want to talk about? I don't need, you know, so there's not any heavy call screening like is typical in talk radio.
Yeah. So you
get it's nice to know the person's name before you, you know, take the call.
Even if it's Oliver Klozoff, right?
That's fine with me. I don't care what the name is. Just something to call.
Yeah, it's just great to hear you guys. You know, I feel like I've gotten more to know, you know, you and Chris just by watching those. Yeah, I just recently subscribed to Stitcher. I gotta start putting my own video podcasts on Stitcher because, you know, a lot of people complain that because of YouTube, you know, nobody wants to watch things on YouTube because it's so inconvenient. Like when you know, go in the car and, you know, traveling, it's just, you know, killing people's batteries. So.
Yeah, probably not a good idea to watch any YouTube while driving anyway. So.
Yeah, I mean, like Stefan Mal, you know, I try to do that, but it's just, you can't, you know, it's just horrible for the battery. But anyway, yeah, so I'm kind of trying to get in, you know, towards the direction of what you guys are doing, but you guys, you know, obviously to a, you know, awesome degree.
Well, it takes a lot of work. I mean, it's been a decade of making phone calls to radio stations to make it happen. I mean, that's what it takes, picking up the phone, and you know, we're willing to do it.
Yeah. That's awesome. You guys, so you guys are just like a three or four team guy, right?
Mark, my co-host, handles all the sales for the show. He does have one other guy who does a little bit of sales. His wife kind of helps him with the books behind the scenes. Myself, I do the affiliate relations. Daryl W. Perry also does affiliate relations for the show. And pretty much everybody, you know, who kind of works on the show also works, you know, on the air as well. And then we also have some additional co-hosts like Chris Cantwell and some other folks who really are appreciated that they come in and they basically volunteer to come in and be on the only big syndicated libertarian show. Michael Dean, of course, with the Freedom Fiends is doing a great job, and he's got about 30 stations, but obviously he's only been at it for a couple of years, so he's doing very well as well. So there are actually two sort of liberty, really principled liberty-oriented shows out there, and it's great to be out there.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about I think it's called the Robin Hood program that you guys did when you used to like put like quarters in the machines like for people that had, you know, run out of time.
Sure, Robin Hooding is one of the surprisingly more controversial forms of activism out here in Keene. We've made news internationally all over the place. I mean, everything from ABC, Good Morning America, to Fox News, to MSNBC. I mean, you name it. There's almost all the major, you know, news sources have covered Robin Hooding at some point. And it's basically the idea is to save people from getting parking tickets. Here in Keene, they're only $5 tickets, which is a little different compared to where you might be. But, you know, still, it's no fun to get a ticket. No. And so the idea is to save somebody from feeling that awful sensation of coming back to their car after they just got out of the barber or the, you know, grabbing lunch or whatever and seeing that ticket on the car, to prevent that from happening for folks, I think a really valuable thing. And people agree, you know, they give the Robin Hooders money. We've been hugged, you know, they've been giving us gift cards and say thank you, and they show a lot of appreciation. On the other side, there are people who support the parking enforcers who have attacked physically. They have threatened,
wow.
They have, you know, lied about us claiming that we're harassing and threatening and intimidating. The parking enforcers, the city of Keene brought a lawsuit against us, actually two lawsuits. They lost that suit in Superior Court. They then appealed to Supreme Court, where we have a great free speech attorney who's actually working pro bono, thank goodness, John Meyer, and he argued that in front of the Supreme Court. We're still awaiting the verdict from the Supreme Court on that. But essentially, the city of Keene was trying to get some sort of a buffer zone set up, a 50-foot radius outside of their parking enforcer, where the Robin Hooders, the people who fill the meters, could not be. And that was what they were asking for, essentially. And I'm obviously summarizing, you know, a year and a half's worth of activism here. But it actually still goes on. It's not at the same level that it was in 2013 and 2014, but it's still going on. Garrett Ian is still out there on a regular basis doing Robin Hooding. And, you know, every now and then some other people will get out and do it as well. So it's one of the more consistent forms of activism that's happened here in New Hampshire. And in my mind, it's one of the more effective ones. I think it does garner a lot of goodwill with people, even though there are obviously the haters and the people who will do, you know, stop at almost nothing to try to throw a wrench into the gears.
Yeah, it's quite tragic that people think, you know, these people, you know, they're just doing their job, right? So what's the harm in that?
That is what people think. And, you know, it's hard to combat that. It's just one of those things that over time, we just need more people to move here as part of the Free State Project so we can get more activists on the ground. A project like Robin Hood wouldn't be possible in a lot of places. You know, if there's, for instance, those kiosks where you go to the little station and you print out the slip, that makes Robin Hooding very, very difficult, if not impossible. And if you don't have the people to do it, if you don't have the dedicated activists who are willing to work at it, then it's just not going to happen. So the more people that we can get together, the more activists we can get here in New Hampshire, the more different kind of projects become possible. Another great example is out in Manchester. They've had, in 2014, they did some cop blocking at some DUI checkpoints where they had 30 or 40 activists out there, you know, holding signs, waving, kind of giving people instructions as to how to get around the checkpoint. And just a tremendous numbers really makes a huge difference. And most liberty-minded folks, whether they, you know, voluntarist, anarchist, whatever, they just don't know that experience because usually where they are, it's pretty lonely. You know, they might know a handful of other people if they're in a larger city, and most of those people don't really do much of anything. Maybe they'll get together and complain about the government every now and then. But ultimately, what can you really do? If you don't have numbers, you don't have a movement. Yeah. And New Hampshire has numbers. You know, we've got over 1,700 people who are here now as part of the Free State Project. Over 16,000 are pledged to make the move. We want to get to 20,000 people pledged, and then the official move will start. But we've already had all this fun, you know, created all this media and gotten all this news coverage with just, I think it's about 1,400 early movers. You add in another 200 or so that were already here when New Hampshire was selected, and that's how that 1,700 number comes up.
Yeah, we're pretty close to New Hampshire, and we just sold our condo in Long Island, and we're in a transit. Yeah, of course, at a massive loss. So don't even think.
Yeah, I took a loss on my house in Florida too, but I'm grateful to be out of there and to be in a community with people who actually care about freedom. It's much nicer here.
Yeah, I really try to talk to my wife about moving, as we're trying to figure out where to move to, right? But the problem is most of our family is around where we're living now. And so I tell her, you know, there's New Hampshire's great, North Carolina's great with their, what is that called? Asheville group, I forget what they're called.
Yeah, I mean, they don't really have anything on the Free State Project. They're they're a very exclusive group from what I could tell. We've actually had some of their spokesmen on Free Talk Live. Uh-huh. They only want to allow people in who, it seems like at least, they only want to allow in anarchists, they only want to allow in atheists and peaceful parent types, and they really kind of exclude a lot of folks. So if you want to do political action, you won't be welcome in the Blue Ridge Liberty Project. If you want to do civil disobedience, they won't welcome you because they don't want to offend community. So they're not really trying to change anything. They're just trying to kind of get away from you know, the world, if you will. That's my interpretation of it. And they certainly don't have hundreds of movers. And so the Free State Project is the most successful liberty migration out there. There are a lot of imitators, but none of them have ever taken off in the way the Free State Project has done. And none of them have the decade plus of movers behind it either.
So what would you say to people who, you know, try to figure out what's better? You know, is it better to move to a freer, less tyrannical state in the Union, or is it better to leave the country altogether and try to move to, you know, a place where
Yeah, I don't blame anybody for wanting to leave. I mean, if that's what you want to do is go and try to live somewhere and try to ignore what goes on around you, then that's certainly your prerogative. That's not the life for me. I mean, I don't want to just sit there and, you know, I don't want to go to my co-host is in Acapulco right now, and he's there for an Acapulco.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a nice place to live. I mean, if you can't ignore this, if you can ignore what the state's doing to people, then okay, then go and do that. But I don't like seeing people being arrested for not hurting anybody else. And don't tell me that doesn't happen in Acapulco. I mean, there's government there. I understand the argument is that, oh, well, they're better than the United States. That's probably true in a lot of ways. But they're also, you know, probably still hurting people because they're governments. Mm. And at least here in New Hampshire, I have the chance to, you know, try to turn that around with the help of other people. I don't think if I went into Acapulco or some other place in the world that it would be as simple. I mean, it's hard enough to sort of be an interloper in a place like New Hampshire. I'm sure, you know, who would take the gringo seriously in Acapulco trying to stop the violence of the system?
It's all right. You look like a native. Don't worry about it.
That's just because I haven't shaved.
But, yeah, right.
Thanks. So, yeah, I mean, I don't disrespect people who that's what they want. If you want to go get away from it, you want to live in a place where the government's not as oppressive, then you should do that. But if you want to have a chance at actually living in a place where the government's going to get smaller over time, then New Hampshire is that place. At least I truly believe that. That's why I picked up my life and I've spent the last almost a decade here now.
Yeah, like, you know, the common statist, you know, rebuttal to anything is move to Somalia, right? So it seems to me that when people do leave and move to a freer place, it's almost kind of a variation of move to Somalia, you know, and because what I think most volunteers would say to somebody who says, you know, just move to Somalia if you don't like it here, is, you know, why do I have to move? You know, this is where my life is, right? This is where my family and you know, the federal government does not own this entire piece of dirt called the United States, right? It doesn't, it's illegitimate, right? So why do I have to move, right?
That's a good question. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with the idea of moving for strategy, right? Like, if there is a better place to go, I would like to go there.
Yeah.
And I feel like New Hampshire is the best place for liberty. It already is the freest, arguably, of the 50 states. You know, if you move here from a place like New York, it's going to be a clear increase in freedom. I mean, New York is, by the Mercatus Center, ranked at, I think, either 49 or 50,
50.
Out of the 50 states. And New Hampshire is in the top four. It changes depending on the year. But, you know, this is the only place where there's a movement of people who are coming here to make things better for more freedom. And the people in New Hampshire who are sort of the Granite Stater natives, a lot of them love freedom too. And they're disturbed by the statists who've moved in here from Massachusetts over the years. And a lot of them really love the fact that the Free Staters are here. Obviously, we're hated by some, but we're also loved by some. So, you know, there's an interesting dynamic going on here. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But so far, it seems to be working out because we actually have, as I mentioned before, libertarians are actually getting elected here, which doesn't happen in other places for the most part, with a few exceptions. Voluntarists, anarchists are actually getting elected. I mean, that's just unbelievable. And I mean, it's we're just getting started. You know, the official move hasn't even happened yet.
Yeah. I think it's very optimistic, I think, the future. And I think a lot of people, you know, they get all wrapped up in the, you know, when you start looking into government, in call it doom porn, right? You just get all wrapped up, like, especially with Alex Jones, people like that start propagating, you know, scare tactics, it seems.
Right. And I think that stuff really takes hold for people when they feel alone. If you feel like, you know, I'm from Sarasota, Florida originally, there were maybe a dozen liberty activists there, and most of them I had to kind of pull teeth to try to get them to volunteer for even the most basic outreach activity. So, you know, it's easy to feel like you got nobody that has your back, you are all alone. And when you feel alone, then it's easy to feel cornered, it's easy to feel trapped, it's easy to feel like the state is just, you know, getting bigger and there's nothing you can do about it, because really, if you're alone, there's nothing you can do about it. So that leads to despair, that leads to frustration, it leads to anger, it leads to possibly violence, and none of those things are going to get us to more freedom.
Yeah, exactly. Quite right. I agree. So I don't want to hold you up. I know you have a show coming up, so why don't you let people know where they can reach you if they want to see your work?
Well, freetalklive.com, we're on the air 7 nights a week from 7 to 10 at night Eastern Time. We can, of course, download it later on if you want via podcast or direct download. And you can also check out blogs over at freekeen.com, which is a great way to connect with a lot of the stuff that's, or a fraction of, rather, the stuff that's happening here in New Hampshire, because we can't cover it all. But we do our best to cover what we can over at freekeen.com. And thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thank you. So actually, before we go, can you just leave my listeners with a little message before we go? If you had to summarize, you know, what you're trying to do, the change you're trying to make, you know, what you want people, you know, what you expect people to do, what would you say to people?
Sure. My primary goal is to encourage liberty-minded people to move to New Hampshire as soon as possible. Whether you join the Free State Project or not, you know, some people have an objection with the Free State Project board and, you know, like what they did with Chris Cantwell, and that's a legitimate objection. Whether or not you join the Free State Project, get to New Hampshire as soon as you possibly can. You will be more free, likely, as soon as you cross the border. You know, you can symbolically throw off your seatbelt because you don't have to legally wear one, but most people do anyway. It's a great feeling to be among people who actually care about freedom. And it's a growing group of people that just, you know, the community just keeps getting better over time. It's hard to really explain how great it is. It's really something that you should experience. And I would recommend that you come to the Liberty Forum, which is coming up in just about a week or so, the March 5th through the 8th, or come to Porkfest in June. If you can't make it to those events, we've got Keenvention that happens in the fall at keenvention.info. These are three great excuses to come up and check out the community here, or just come up anytime and, you know, let us know that you're coming and we'll, you know, go out to lunch or something like that. So
cool.
Love to have you.
Very cool. I hope my wife is going to listen to that message.
Yeah, bring her up. I mean, bring the family up to these events too, because there are a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of wives who need to get convinced, and a lot of them will be at the Liberty Forum. So that's certainly a challenge, and it's worth overcoming if possible.
Awesome.
Because it's great to be here.
Yeah, look, it looks great. Well, thank you very much, Ian, for the opportunity. So this is Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network and the Conscious Resistance YouTube channel. Wishing everyone have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye.